It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and limping, on this 27th day of June 2022. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I'm thinking that maybe for the foreseeable future, maybe for the rest of the future, we might perhaps begin every program with the following statement. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. I mean, that's... fuck the Pledge of Allegiance or singing the national anthem. That's the single greatest truth of the United States of America in 2022. Memorize it. No, really, do. Memorize it. Commit it to memory. Say it to yourself until you have gotten it so thoroughly internalized that you cannot any longer live with some myth of freedom in this country. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. That is what our supreme, majestic, puissant, Catholic masters have told us the state of the nation is. And come January, or maybe early February, whenever it happens, when President Biden takes to the podium, instead of saying, "My fellow Americans, the state of the nation is," and fill in the blank, Joe, just say, "My fellow Americans, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of." It needs, and I know what a grievous statement that is. It's been running on a goddamn loop through my head ever since the first time I read it. And it hurts. And it's sickening and it's nauseating. And it's true. Hi, I'm Robin. This is The Horn, like I said, for the 27th day of June 2022. I'm getting ahead of myself. Because, among other things, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. So we say thanks. And I say thanks especially for a magnificent Friday on the front porch and what happened in the days following. But we say thank you to our contributors and subscribers for the 27th of June, the 26th, the 25th. And so thank you to Lady B for jumping in right before airtime. Thank you, Jeffrey, for jumping in. Thank you to our buddy Robert in Australia. Thank you so much to Jude at Women's Standing, commemorating our beloved friend Juanita's 88th birthday, that strong and powerful and loving woman. Thank you to Amelia. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you so much to Lori. Lori with a note saying, we need to keep this and other programs like this going or we will not have a voice, plain and simple. Thank you for providing this, Robin, and keep up the good work. Thank you. Thank you, Lori. Thank you. Thank you to our dear friend Max. And thank you to Gary and Gaia. Max single-handedly took care of Matt's challenge at the close of the program on Friday. Thank you to Larry. Larry did the same. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Peter. Thank you to Mark. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of this program, keeping this conversation possible. And so there's some happy news. We were down. We are now down to, let's see, to finish the month of June in proper form. Thanks to those of you who got active and got busy, we are now down to only $1,350 to finish the month of June. That's almost on track. We've got today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, and so that's 12. We're only $150 actually behind for. So we'll just measure down from 1350. And thank you all, because this conversation does, and I feel like we need this conversation. This is our only real chance to talk to each other in real time about these things. And I want to continue that conversation each and every evening. It is so important that our voices be heard, and that we talk to each other, that we lift each other up, and that we give each other, if it is hope that we need, that we give each other hope. If it is a boost to our righteous fury, then we give that to each other. And along the way, hopefully, we'll maybe find some way to laugh or carry on or have a little bit of joy here and there. Hi, Joy. I had a little giggle over the weekend. I put it up on Facebook. I'd never seen it before, this little line. Saturday was a very busy day, and I attended a political reception that was just delightful. I attend and did some errand running. I found what I thought were some bargains, and turned out not to be, so they got returned. Not all things that are marked women's 2X actually fit me. No. So they went back. I knew they would. But I'm just, you know, not quite 2 years into my transition and still trying to work on, you know, wardrobe. Later that evening, I stopped by a little place here. It's one of the tourist places, but they've got this big open-air bar and band area, and God, they had a band! Oh, what a band they had! It was kind of a ska band, really. And there was an excellent sax player, and there was a young woman playing trombone who was just absolutely tearing the place to pieces. And at one point, one of my gal pals grabbed me and said, "Come on, we gotta go." And so, yes, of course. And I got to learn. Okay, TMI. Maybe I'm the Morian. It's Morian Monday. We will get to the heavy stuff in a minute. But ladies' room graffiti is a hell of a lot more intelligent than men's room graffiti. Most of the places in public, you know, they're like, you know, stores and stuff, so you're not going to see a lot of graffiti. But I'd just seen a story a couple of days before, Annette had sent it to me, from an excavation in England called, I think, Vindolandia. It was an encampment along Hadrian's Wall. You know, the Romans marched right up to the edge of the known world, met the Scots, and went, fuck this, and built a wall.
A big, beautiful wall.
It didn't really work, but that's not, well, it is kind of the point, isn't it? And in the camp at Vindolandia, they found where some guy had, and, you know, graffiti took a lot more work back then. This presumably Roman soldier had actually taken the time to chisel a dick into a piece of stone and write a guy's name next to it. And it just sort of, and I was thinking about that as I sat there, and you know, one woman had written, "My allergies are so bad right now." But another one had written across the stall door, "Well-behaved women seldom make history." And I just kind of sat there contemplating it, and it's like, yes, yes. And the time for behaving well is, well, over. I later found out, thank you, Joy, in Ann Arbor, that no, it was not Marilyn Monroe. That it was, in fact, an academic who wrote that phrase to begin with, Laurel Thatcher Ulrich. She's a professor of early American history at Harvard, but she was a graduate student back then. In the spring of 1976, when she published an article in the issue of the Journal of American Quarterly, and the name of the article was "Virtuous Women Found: New England Ministerial Literature, 1668 to 1735," and she talks about how women were largely erased in that era simply because they behaved according to the dictates of the patriarchy and the theocracy. And the only women that were remembered by history were the ones who acted up and acted out. And it's time to act up and act out. Well-behaved women seldom make history. And I hope the other woman's allergies got better. Meanwhile, you know, over in the boys' room, they're drawing dicks on the walls. Yeah, well. I loved it when somebody, I was writing about it on Facebook, and somebody, some guy said, "How would you know what's on it?" Yeah, this guy named Bob told me. Yeah. But a little levity, a little lightheartedness to begin the program. And with any luck, you know, we'll knock down the fundraising goal some. I had a note from Ralph saying, "I'm willing to do another $25 contribution if somebody else will match it, so we can get $1,350 down to $1,300 if somebody will match Ralph's no, really, fuck the Supreme Court some more challenge." Thank you, Ralph. Thank you so much. And also to begin the program, a note from Lady B. This was in response to a text my liberal and very supportive friend Michael sent me. He was expressing his anger and disappointment over the Roe versus Wade decision in Dobbs. I've shortened my niece's names to nicknames to protect their privacy. Lady B writes, "I'm so done. I'm trying not to care anymore. I don't want to care anymore, but to quote Richard Linklater, to withdraw in disgust is not the same as apathy. I physically can coast through this. I'm way past childbearing age, but my nieces aren't. Bebe's 37, had an emergency hysterectomy, so she's cool, but Mo, 44 tomorrow, Mara, 36 on Wednesday, Kiki, 34, Ebby, 33, Relly, 32, Tura, 29, Lexi, 26, and CM, 13. Dude, we've got to do better by them. I've got no answers, but I'll say this. White women are a powerful voting bloc, and yes, it's up to all of us liberals and progressives to fix this, but white women will have a fuck of a lot more power than they think. They need to convince their men they have a dog in this fight, too. This will affect all men, too. Maybe white women whose husbands don't care should go all Lysistrata on them. Can't get pregnant if you don't have sex. Right to lifers cry about what could be. Pro-choice folks acknowledge the here and now. And women right now are being forced to make a choice about whether or not they want to spend the rest of their lives in a box. Because 18 years old isn't a magical cutoff age. Your kid is your kid until God willing and the crick don't rise. You're gone. Kids are amazing, Michael. You and your wifey made a conscious choice, prepared for it, and are doing an awesome job. But if a woman who didn't want a kid, or ended up forced to carry the child of a man who doesn't love them, or rape them, or gets no say in the matter, that's cruel and inhumane." The Supreme Court has no right to force a woman to make that choice. None. How could nine strangers rule on something so personal? It shouldn't even be an issue. An abortion is a medical procedure. Terminating pregnancy is not the same as killing a child. A child is a human being who breathes, eats, and shits on its own. And on others of their own, too, I'll add parenthetically. Parents feed it and look out for its needs. Both share the job because the kid is no longer a part of a woman's body. After the birth, if you take its life, it is murder, but not before it's born. No man who's ever assaulted his pregnant wife and caused a miscarriage has ever gone to jail for murder. Ponder that. Anyway, Robin, Lady B says, I just realized something. I'm beginning to doubt the Mary and Joseph story. God didn't magically impregnate Mary. Joseph did, and at the time, it wasn't a crime. She was old enough to breed, and like all men at the time, Joseph either took what he wanted or she consented. I think it might have been the former. Their precocious, whip-smart, and acutely aware firstborn son grew up to be a profound thinker, speaker, and a radical advocate for justice for the Israelites. It wasn't Jesus himself who wanted to be a supernatural rock star. It was charlatans and gaslighters who saw dollar, shekel, gold signs and made him into a god long after he was able to object. Women have always had incredible power. Mary gave birth to an extraordinary child, one who probably took most of his cues from her. But that wouldn't fit the narrative. Joseph was too ordinary, maybe a bit slow, so he was pushed aside. And why don't we know more about Jesus' childhood or teen years? The Bible writers want us to believe there was no way Mary was that smart. It must have been God. And, of course, God is a male. Does that also mean he also has a penis? Blasphemy. I know. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what we're going to do. I just don't know. Those with deep pockets, please hook Robin up today. All us women are being punished and pushed back to the Stone Age. Let Robin continue to speak her piece. Because if she's not free, if all of us women are not free, you men aren't free either. It's as simple as that. And it is, Lady B. It is. There's so much food for thought there. One old jock to another, Lady B, may I commend to you a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful song called Jesus, The Missing Years by the late, great John Prine, who had Nitwit Nero not completely ignored the threat from COVID, might still be singing to us and entertaining us, and we might still be loving him in the here and now and not in his place as an icon in the hereafter. A modern-day saint, if you will. Again, and that was the title of the album, and it came out, what, in the, late 80s, early 90s. I've still got it. I still play. Oh, it's got a bunch of great songs on it. The album is simply called The Missing Years. The song is Jesus, The Missing Years, with a wonderful line where Jesus mutters, "You're going to kill me, Mama." It's kind of got an Elvis flavor to it, you know? And I confess, I want to see the Elvis movie. Top Gun Regunned, or whatever it is, was tied at the box office with Elvis this weekend. That's enough of a story to make me want to see it on the big screen and hear the music really loud through the Dolby 9.27853 sound system. Why did I go there? Part and parcel of what happened on Friday, and, you know, I've now got 3 full days of being a compulsory Catholic under my belt, and I don't like it. This was the last weekend of the West Virginia Renaissance Fair, and it ran every weekend in June, and I had thought about going, but the weather was a little frightful yesterday, and it's very much an outdoor affair, and I didn't want to be soaked in the rain. And, I had previously joked about going as a nun, and suddenly that wasn't so funny anymore. Because, well, I wonder how many women were wandering around this last weekend of the Renaissance Fair in handmade costumes. I don't know. But here we all are, compulsory Catholics in a United States transformed in a moment into a most puissant Catholic theocracy. And there he was, Pope Frank, taking a victory lap for life. But certainly not the lives of the mothers. No, not at all. No. And, well, we all know by now what, you know, and particularly over at Slate there was an article that I thought rather tellingly honest, namely that the only honest opinion in the Dobbs case was the concurring opinion of Slappy Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas. And I just kind of, and look, there is so much news we've got to get to today, because we also have to talk about the Kennedy case. No, I'm not talking about November 22nd, 1963. I'm talking about June the 27th, 2022. And well, it's another blow against freedom. It's another blow for theocracy. We will get to that, I promise. But I want to point out, and by the way, if you'd like to participate in the multimedia madcap wacky zany real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, and it's a very good time, pop on by. Squeaky's there. You'll be greeted by Squeaky and Roger and New Jersey Nick and Natural and Malin and Anatole, and they'll be happy to see you. Pop in there. But I got a couple of observations, things to, you know, for the front end of this, and hopefully a little food for thought. We are now a full business day into, you know, a business day and a half into the theocracy. And I applaud Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for calling for the impeachment of Neal and Bratt, and that's Neal spelled with a K, and another K, and another K. Neil Gorsuch. Do you realize that they both of them were educated at that shithole boys Jesuit school in Georgetown? They were within 2 years of each other. I think Neil was, with a K, was 2 years behind Bratt, who likes beer, and little passed out girls from nearby parochial schools. Yeah, they both come from that shithole school that teaches young Catholic boys to hate every woman on earth and to consider themselves superior. Supreme, if you will. Religious supremacists. But anyway, and you know, it costs a lot of money to go to that shithole school in Georgetown. Catholic parents pay a ton of money to send their children there to have their minds poisoned by a bunch of filthy priests who teach them that women are and should be second-class citizens. Just to kind of remember, kind of sort of thing. But no, really, there's an argument being made by Dahlia Lithwick and Neil Siegel over at Slate why Clarence Thomas's outrageous opinion is the only honest concurrence in Dobbs. And we will be talking about Slappy for a while. But anyway, to get back to the original topic, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez rightly called for the impeachment of Neil and Bratt, and she added Slappy into the mix. She focused her righteous fury on Neal and Bratt, though, because they both testified to Congress under oath that Roe versus Wade was a precedent of the court, and Bratt even went so far as to call it a precedent upon a precedent. Well, precedents are not to be easily overturned, and yet if you read Sammy Bad Breath's opinion, you know that he found it to be no problem whatsoever to overturn. I don't know why Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez didn't mention old Balls and Strikes or The Handmaid. Super precedent, I think that was the term used. Super precedent for Roe. Yeah. But here's the thing. To call for the impeachment of these theocratic, majestic, supreme, puissant Catholic princes is not the same as filing a bill of impeachment against them. Now, Representative Green from Texas, the Houston area, stood long and long alone in his solitary quest to see Nitwit Nero impeached. He filed a bill of impeachment against Nitwit Nero when to even mention it would have caused rippling horrors of bowel-watering fear to run through and up and down the gelatinous spines of centrists all over the country. But he nonetheless stood alone, knowing he was doing the right thing. So here's my question. A bill of impeachment is not that, or a motion for, or however you want to style it, is not that complicated an instrument to file in the House of Representatives. One not need be a member of, say, the House Judiciary Committee. Any member can file any bill. I mean, hasn't marginal trailer queen filed at least a couple of bills of impeachment against President Biden? Hasn't she? Or is she just fundraising and yakking about it? I seem to think that she... Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter. She's an idiot. She's a dum-dum. But here's the point. Sometimes bills can be short and quite elegant. I mean, for instance, I'm just drafting off the top of my head here. For and as a direct and proximate result of the perjury committed in his Senate confirmation hearing, Brett Kavanaugh be and is hereby impeached. It gives sufficient notice to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Majestic Puissant Catholic Supreme Court Justice of the charge against him, and you file it. The parliamentarian says, oh, this deals with the impeachment of a Supreme Court Justice, and assigns it to the House Committee on the Judiciary. Boom. Done. Easy. Hasn't happened yet. And like I said, we are well over a day and a half into our theocracy. It grows stronger every day. Why has it not happened? Representative Ocasio-Cortez, why have you not filed it? Why have the squad not filed it together? Why has not every strong woman in the House of Representatives signed off on such an impeachment? Why? Why are we only talking about it and not doing it? Talk, as they say, is cheap. This cannot be only talk. A similar bill could be filed with Neil Gorsuch's name on it. As Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez pointed out, You could file one against Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. Not for anything to do with his confirmation hearing, but for his blatant and arguably illegal behavior in ruling on cases in which his cosplay trad white wife, Ginny, I spell it G-Y-N-Y, was involved. Now, judges have been impeached in the past. Precedent for the impeachment of a Supreme Court justice was established fairly on in this nation's history. It was established in the impeachment in the early 19th century of a Supreme Court justice by the name of Chase. No, not Salmon P. Chase. Different Chase. And the fact of the matter was, it was a matter of, and oddly enough, presiding over that impeachment trial, and everyone uniformly agreed that he did an absolutely laudable and masterful job, was the Vice President of the United States at the time, one Aaron Burr. But at the time, the President of the United States did not much like his Vice President, because Aaron Burr made the House make the decision over the course of a number of ballots as to who would be the President of the United States, him or thin, reedy-voiced plantation owner and enslaver of human beings from Old Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, who kept his particularly kept an enslaved woman of whom he was particularly fond locked in a room without windows, in a building made of brick, so maybe people couldn't hear the screaming and the pleas of "No, Marse Tom, no, please, no." No. That's purely conjecture, though. She was his dead white wife's half-sister, you know, Sally Hemings was. But Thomas Jefferson was an incredibly venal and vengeful man. He would go on to, he would go on to try to have Aaron Burr murdered in the name of the state. We've talked about this in the past. It's a complicated story. It's a fascinating piece of American history, but not necessarily germane right here. But because he was a vindictive man, he also wanted to see this Supreme Court Justice Chase impeached. Because if I recall correctly, and my memory is a little sketchy here, Justice Chase was a Federalist, and Thomas Jefferson despised Federalists more than he despised, the British, or John Adams at the time. God, he hated Federalists. White hot fire, and I do mean white. And so he used his political power to seek the impeachment of Justice Chase. Vice President Burr presided over the trial in the Senate, and Chase was, I think, narrowly acquitted. Senate was a much smaller affair back then, only maybe 28 members or so. Maybe 30, not sure. But the finding in that impeachment of Justice Chase was that, in the end, Chase had done nothing wrong, and that impeachment was being pursued against him on solely partisan political grounds. Probably true. But it established process and procedure, and Burr did a fantastic job, and that's kind of what we have to look back at. So the question would be, would it be purely a political matter to impeach? No. No, it would not. It would be an impeachment, especially, well, particularly in regard to Neil with a K and Brat, for the crime of lying to Congress under oath. Okay? The witnesses of the lies, because this being Moran Monday, we have to have a Moran Monday nominee, and today's first Moran Monday nominee is, no need for a drum roll, but, this might come in handy.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
And in this case, particularly of the land known as Marion County, West Virginia. Where from Joe to the mansion born ariseth, and Joe has pretty much confessed. He was asked about his vote for Brett Kavanaugh and said,
well, you know, I'm personally pro-life, but I feel like he misled me when he told me that Roe versus Wade was precedent.
Holy crap. It's so long ago now, I can scarcely remember. I can remember where I was, oddly enough. I was carrying on a conversation over in Fayetteville with some friends when Joe was voting. Never mind. But Joe to the mansion born broke with every other Democrat and voted for the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. He also voted for the confirmation of Neil with a K Gorsuch, who also assured Joe Manchin that he felt Roe v. Wade to be precedent. Now, it is not a crime to lie to a member of the Senate if you're not under oath. But Joe, and of course, there's Susan Collins. Susie Q was also assured and publicly proclaimed what she was assured of, that Roe was settled law and need not be touched. And, of course, I contend that they knew then that they were lying. They were lying before they walked into those respective senators' offices and continued to lie through their confirmation process. Because it's what they are. Because it was necessary for them to lie, because that was the only way they were going to get on the court and be able to do the dogmatic and doctrinal business of their true masters. You know, the church. Christianity in writ large. And so the Senate trial of these toxic, misogynistic, woman-hating freaks almost makes you feel sorry for Mrs. Gorsuch and Mrs. Kavanaugh, doesn't it? But no, not really, because they're self-hating women. And that tempers any such sympathy. So, no, that's not true. That is not true. Lee in New York says, unimportant fact, both were put on Federal Reserve notes. Jefferson got the $2 note, Chase got the $10,000 note. No, that was not this Chase. That was Salmon P. Chase, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who was elevated to the court by Abraham Lincoln to keep him out of the presidential election of 1864. Never mind. Oh, history's such a busy thing. So it would be interesting to hear the testimony under oath of, say, Joe to the mansion born and Susan Collins. But that'll never happen. .. Unless .. somebody gets off their collective asses in the House of Representatives and files bills of impeachment against those two. And And once again, we are back to the argument made, I believe, by Shirley Chisholm during the Nixon impeachment, wherein she said, what the Senate does with a bill of impeachment is the Senate's business, but the House has a constitutional and oath-driven obligation to do its duty. And I would submit that the duties of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of Ayanna Pressley, of Rashida Tlaib, of Ilhan Omar, of Barbara Lee, of Auntie Maxine, and yes, of Nancy Pelosi, is to sign off on a bill of impeachment against these two freaks, these two theocratic monstrosities. Send it to committee, have hearings in the committee, present testimony in the committee, let the House subpoena Joe Manchin and Susan Collins and any other senator to whom these goons said that Roe versus Wade and Griswold and the progeny of Griswold and Roe are settled law. Have that testimony under oath, then vote. I know it's a very busy time in the House of Representatives right now. Among other things, we didn't think we were going to see another installment of the J6 committee until sometime after the 4th. Not so fast. We get one tomorrow. Kind of out of the blue. Today, the J6 committee scheduled a hearing for tomorrow at 1 p.m. They presented no details whatsoever. Everybody's sort of in the dark, but they said that it was an absolute necessity based upon information that had come in. In the story from the New York Times, Luke Broadwater and Maggie Haberman wrote, "In recent days, the committee obtained and has been poring over hours of footage shot by a documentary filmmaker who was embedded with President Donald J. Trump, his family, and members of his inner circle immediately before, during, and after the..." Ah, come on, Maggie, Luke, Skywalker, whatever your name is. After the riot. Do we have to go through this again? A riot is the language of the unheard. These people were not unheard. This was a coup. Somebody get hold of the style section at the old gray lady and tell them that the rest of us are out here referring to it as a fascist coup, because it was. Jesus, jumping Christ, on my filthy morning habit today, Mild and Mika said things that you would not have heard anywhere else in the United States of America, except maybe here, the Malloy program. She referred to the Republicans as American fascists today. And she brought receipts and she drilled it in and countersunk the screws. It was kind of a stunning moment, really. But, no. It was a fascist coup there, Maggie and Luke. They go on and write, "Aides refused to divulge what additional evidence they planned to present on Tuesday or who would be testifying, saying that the panel was concerned for the security of its witnesses." Well, now, this is beginning to seem like a plot point from the Untouchables movie with Kevin Costner in it and Sean Connery, and "When they bring a knife, you bring a gun." Concerned for the security of its witnesses. So will we all be tuned in tomorrow at 1? Will we? Yeah? Maybe this hearing is because of Mo Brooks' letter last Thursday. Ralph's rights. Possibly. Possibly. But that's where we are. We need, and we don't need, like, Representative Green standing alone. We need every woman who has, and we need every woman in the House of Representatives who has uttered so much as a mumbling peep about a woman's right to bodily autonomy to sign off on this bill of impeachment, because it is not driven solely by politics. It is driven by the willingness of white men, absolutely remorselessly and relentlessly determined to get their hands on the levers of power to do their master's bidding. Their willingness to lie, to cheat, in order to get the position. Their politics is what their politics is. Their loathsomeness is what their loathsomeness is. But their willing to lie to get there is illegal. It is criminal in nature. I mean, I guess we could sit around and wait for Merrick Garland to impanel a grand jury and charge him, but I'm pretty sure the sun will be a red dwarf by then. So, like I said, a lot to talk about this evening. And, by the way, Lady B says, Uncle Thomas reminds me of the Chappelle Show's Clayton Bigsby. Oh, I remember that. That's back when Chappelle was funny. In the sketch, it's revealed that the KKK member is black but didn't know it because he was blind and raised by racists. When he found out his wife was white, he divorced her for being an N-word lover. I think it's time Uncle Thomas divorced Jenny. It's an easy way not to be blamed for her crimes. How can she be true to the cause if she's married to an N-word? Slappy never had a claim upon any respect or dignity in that office to begin with because of how he got it. The sliming of Anita Hill. The destruction of a woman's reputation. Like I said, somewhere I imagine Ms. Hill sitting around going, trying to tell y'all. Oh, but no, Arlen Specter. And yeah, the present occupant of the White House did everything they could to get Slappy onto the court. Darlene in Connecticut says, I think COVID Barrett, I don't even say her name anymore, I just call her the handmaid, qualified things a bit more to give herself an out. I think she said that Roe was precedent, but not super precedent because it's so controversial and not widely accepted as the final word, whereas I think she cited Brown versus Board of Education is super precedent because it's widely accepted as law and not controversial. Yeah, and of course the reason it's not controversial is because public schools in America are more segregated now than they were in 1954. Not lecturing, Darlene, I know you know that. Of course, all this, Darlene continues, is utter bullshit, just like originalism and textualism, just like judicial philosophy is used against KBJ, just like McConnell refusing to do his constitutional obligation to hold advice and consent hearings on Obama's SCOTUS pick based on a made-up new condition, and time again, Dems do nothing. They continue to enable and repigs and continue to push the boundaries and take more and more from us. Just as President Biden is doing now by stating he's deeply disappointed at the SCOTUS' overturning of Roe v. Wade while talking out of the other side of his mouth, stating he'll do everything within his power to stop this. Deeply disappointed? Deeply disappointed? Is that the best you can do, Joe? I mean, Joe's got granddaughters. There are people in Joe's immediate family who are of childbearing age. Of course, I said Friday it's time for Joe to bow out of Holy Mother Church and go become an Episcopalian or something. Send a Jubilee greeting to the head of his new church over there in London, in Buckingham Palace or whatever. God, wouldn't it be nice if religion didn't torment our lives? Darlene says, and I suspect she takes no joy in writing it, maybe the Repigs are right about the Sleepy Joe slur. All I know is that we're still waiting, Joe. Still waiting. We cannot let up. We must push the Dems relentlessly as they are mostly establishment politicos that... Mostly? All, Darlene. All. All. You become a part of the establishment the minute you lower your hand and take the other one off the Bible. That's why the other word is institutionalist. But anyway, Darlene says, mostly establishment politicos that believe in the institution above all else and that as long as good guys get in, we'll be okay, but we no longer have the luxury of that belief or hope. The good guys are not where we need them, or they're too meek, and the SCOTUS is rotten almost to the core. I can't say fully to the core because we have three who are deciding cases with some compassion, and oh, I feel bad for KBJ. She's stepping into a hornet's nest. Well, but, those six puissant, majestic Catholic majesties will, I'm sure, invite her to some sort of a high tea or some such, or find out that she likes to play tennis or golf or parcheesi or pinochle or cribbage, and suddenly there will be one of those majority who's just absolutely crazy for cribbage. And then she'll have a new bestie on the court. You know, just like RBG and fat dead Tony Scalia. Oh, he made one of the best penne alla arrabbiatas. Yeah. Jeremy says, it's Iwanka. It's Iwanka in their sights. Evidently, in this documentary, she told the filmmaker the exact opposite of what she did the January 6th committee. In fact, she told her father to take every action available to overturn the election. And so the House, the J6 committee, is worried about her security? Are they saying that down there at Mar-a-Lardass, Nitwit Nero might order up a hit on his favorite? Meanwhile, somewhere, Tefania is saying, hit her again, Daddy, and put some stank on it! Maybe you'll like me then. That family. Ugh. Those high-rise hillbillies. Moving inexorably backward, Flavio says, so Alito's favorite jurist is Matthew Hale, who, among other things, sent two women, I mean witches, to the gibbet, and whose sentences were relied on in Salem. Does that mean burning at the stake is back on the table? Or, short of that, will women now undergo prison or shock therapy for being hysterical termagants and viragos? Hey, let's bring back public scold, Flavio! I mean, you don't even have to go back as far as the colonial days to find that. I've been imploring people to read my dear friend Jeff Bigger's biography of Anne Royal, Trials of a Scold, for literally years now. Why this book is not a movie? Why somebody who pitches, who does the elevator speech and does treatments in Hollywood has not done it for this book in this era? I don't know. Anne Royal was one of those women who was definitely not well behaved, and she damn sure made history. Desperate for some means of a livelihood and not able or willing to rely on the generosity of some dude, she'd been ripped off out of her inheritance from her dead husband. Well, before he died, he had educated her to the best of his abilities, for he was a Virginia gentleman. He lived in what is now Greenbrier County, West Virginia. He was a Revolutionary War veteran, and he was wealthy. And she'd been a housekeeper. And, well, you know, guys. But they apparently, despite the vast age difference, fell in love. And, or something like it. And he left her his estate. And his children by his previous marriage raised hell, stopped her from getting a goddamn farthing, and immiserated and pauperized her. But she was a strong woman, and she went, she began to travel. She did some of the first frontier riding, some of the first travel riding in the Young Republic. She documented the misery of the Northwest Alabama frontier and the absolutely shitty lives that people lived. She gained some notoriety for that, among other things. She also interviewed and published a word picture, a profile, if you will, of a declining Dolly Madison, dying in penury and poverty. And then she eventually found her way to Washington, D.C., where she got her hands on a printing press and printed a scandal sheet called Paul Pry. And it was as the publisher of Paul Pry that she had the charge of being a public scold levied against her, the punishment for which was to have been repeatedly dunked in the dunking chair in the frigid killing waters of the Potomac. And she raised seven shades of hell in her trial in the District of Columbia and struck fear into the hearts of powerful men. They convicted her anyway, but they decided to suspend the sentence of murdering her by water chairing. So, yeah. Yeah, Flavio says, you read my mind. Ann Royal. I couldn't remember who it was, if it was Nellie Bly or Ida B. Wells. Public scold. Yes, Ann Royal. Everything old is new again. Of course, in Gun Mad America, it probably won't reach the point of dunking stools or stocks or burnings. Some Republican lawful gun owner will probably. I mean, I'm surprised that women's reproductive health centers all over the country haven't just been exploding all weekend long. But, you know, the cops have been something less than friendly to the fairer sex as they protested in the streets. Women have been tear gassed, clubbed, beaten, knocked to the ground by police. Women protesting have been vehicularly assaulted in the streets by white men driving automobiles, or at least automobile. And while I think the Furies are awake, those women of ancient Greek mythology who had the task of tormenting men who had offended them every minute of every day of their lives, so that they could not go to their graves with any even tiny scintilla measure of peace. Though the Furies are awake, the Furies are not yet fully engaged. And thank you to Felicia. Felicia, out in San Diego, formerly of Nebraska, said, I just sent another $25 your way. The horse in the bar joke made me laugh out loud and surely deserved to be acknowledged. That was worth at least $25. Hang in there, ma'am. You're doing a great service. Keep it lit. Thank you. Thank you. So, Ralph's challenge is met. Mark also met Ralph's challenge. And so that means we're down to 1275. 1275 to go to, be fully funded for the month of June. And if we could get there before Thursday, we could actually have a fundraising free radio day. Those are rare as hen's teeth these days. But it's at least within the realm of possibility. $75 more and we're actually fully on track for the next 4 days, and we can just pray our way to the last day of June. Hard to believe it's going to be the last day of June. The summer flies by while the winter creeps day by day. But yeah, I was thinking of one of the greatest characters Shakespeare ever created in terms of complexity of character. Of course, she gets a bad rap. I'm talking about Lady Macbeth. And it was Lady Macbeth who, because she had no other means to access power, because she was a woman in a patriarchal society, pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed Macbeth to kill King Duncan. Eventually telling Macbeth, who was feeling a little squishy about the idea of killing his dread sovereign, "Screw your courage to the sticking place." Now, whether Shakespeare was being playful with the word screw, we don't know. Some think so, some think not. But the fact of the matter is, that line has come down to us as an exhortation for doing something for which one might not have the necessary and requisite courage. And so here we are. So, AOC, Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Barbara Lee, Cori Bush, and every woman in the House of Representatives, frankly, who is not some sort of self-hating Republican woman, get together, hammer out some simple language. You can use the previous hour of the program for your template if you'd like. And file a bill of impeachment. Oh, I know. We don't want to steal the thunder of the J6 committee. But listen, this is that time in our history when Congress simply must, there is no choice, walk and chew gum at the same time. Screw your courage to the sticking place. Agreed? Do we have consensus? I certainly hope we do. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. We are now down to $1,250. We've got $1,250 to go to finish the month of June on time and appropriately funded. Now, maybe, I guess, we can get on to the outrage du jour. Well, no. I got a note here from Ron and Raleigh. This will introduce it. Subject line, slippery slope. Today, the SCOTUS has thrown another wrench into American jurisprudence. The court found in favor of the coach in Bremerton versus Kennedy. That would be Coach Kennedy. The coach insisted on praying in the locker room and on the 50-yard line after games. The school asked him to stop. He refused, so they put him on paid leave until his contract ran out, after which he contracted with a group of right-wing lawyers. You know, 501c3s, of course. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Basically, legal pettifoggers who work relentlessly at creating a theocracy in these United States. They took the case to a very receptive SCOTUS. The SCOTUS found his First Amendment rights were violated. Fuck the Establishment Clause. So now he can pray to his heart's content on public property and do so on public time, I will add. How long before prayer in the classroom returns? Ron!
Shh. It just did.
And they will be barking and grunting and hooting before lunch and before class and after class, you know, depending on where you are. Because remember, as I've discussed in the past, and for instance, I know I know Miss Terry could attest, back when we were little closeted trans high schoolers, every day we had a Bible reading. Mr. Brewer, the principal, would have some lucky young student on to read from the Bible and lead the Pledge of Allegiance that day. Illegal as fuck. But, you know, when it comes to things that the right wing and the religion industry don't like, they adopt the principle of Andrew Jackson having been told that his Genocidal Indian Removal Act was unconstitutional. To which President General Genocidal Andrew Jackson replied, "Well, Justice Marshall has made his ruling. Now let him enforce it." George Wallace tried the same shtick with the stand in the schoolhouse door, but he ran up against a president who was willing to actually do the enforcing part on behalf of the Supreme Court of the United States. And he folded like a cheap suit. But there was no such enforcement for something as squishy as a Bible reading. And your humble hostess had a rather profound ability to read the printed word at the time. So I got to do the Bible reading once in a while. And so I would read verses about, "And their eyeballs shall rot out, and their heads and their tongues shall..." It was at least fun. Another fella I know, a bit of a stoner, he didn't let anybody know what he had in his hands and went in and read from the Quran. Subversion takes many forms. And, you know, for those of us of a certain age, how many of us have seen the sort of hippie art poster of a bygone era of a mouse holding up its middle finger at a bald eagle screaming down at it with its claws wide open, and the caption merely read, "The last great act of defiance." It reminds me of a joke. Some white colonialist explorers one from England, one from France, and one from, let's say Tennessee, were captured encroaching upon indigenous land. And they were staked out in the middle of the village, and justice was about to be done to them. And the head of the group came up and said, "Listen, we're going to use your bones for our tools, your flesh for our meat, and your skin for our canoes." And he looks at the Englishman and says, they're untied, and hands the Englishman a knife and says, "Have you any last words?"
The Englishman takes the knife and says, "God save the Queen," and cuts his own throat and dies. He walks next to the Frenchman and says, "We're going to use your bones for our tools, your flesh for our meat, and your skin for our canoes. Have you any last requests?" And the Frenchman says, "S'il vous plaît, may I please have the knife?" He hands him the knife and he says, "Vive la France!" and cuts his throat and dies. He then walks up to the guy from Tennessee and says, "We're going to use your bones for our tools, your flesh for our meat, and your skin for our canoes. Any last requests?" And the Tennessean says, "Yeah, can I have a fork?" A little taken aback, but sure, and he hands the Tennessean a fork, and he says, "Fuck your canoes!" Starts stabbing himself all over his neck. Oh, well, long way to go. Bad joke. Sorry. Trying to inject a little levity here somewhere along the way. But yes, Bremerton versus Kennedy was announced today. We knew it was going to be. We'd been talking about it for a while. Jude in the Great Northwest took the boots and flowers and did a stand at the stadium. There was nobody who actually cared about their money who bet against Kennedy in this. I checked in with the odds makers and over at Harrah's in Reno, and the guys were like, "Are you kidding? We're not taking bets on that. We can't get the money right." He's going to win. It's a boat race. Are you kidding? And so it came to pass. Now, Ron did a good job of laying it out, and that's basically the story. The guy wasn't even the head coach. He was an assistant coach. And after every game, he and it wasn't a matter of him kneeling quietly on the 50-yard line. Oh, fuck no. No. This Christian, completely at odds with what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, said, was out there braying away, bothering the hell out of God on the 50-yard line, and a whole bunch of players gathered around him because, you know, maybe you could make it to first string if you prayed loud enough. Don't know if there were any Jewish or Muslim or Hindu or Sikh or Buddhist or animist or... No, kids on the squad? No.
He was just sharing the message of the love and grace of Christ Jesus.
I know, probably the wrong accent or a thing. Buddy, one of the problems with Christianity is that at its core, there is a paranoid martyr complex. And that is, and that's where the idea comes from that, "And you shall be persecuted in my name." Oh God, I've heard that so many times in so many churches. And so they get a little, I don't know, theocracy stiffy when they think somebody's being mean to them because they love Jesus so much. Now, nobody told this jackass that he couldn't pray. They said he couldn't do it on the clock. And they said he couldn't do it in such a way as to make it look like an endorsement of religion by the Bremerton School District. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with the Bremerton School District. But it didn't matter when it got up to their majestic, puissant, supreme Catholic majesties. Oh, I know, I know. Neil with a K goes to an Episcopal church now. But then again, there are Episcopal churches in this country that are as weird as any as any of these hardcore anti-Vatican II churches. So, as Ron said, eventually they put him on paid leave. They let his contract run out and didn't rehire him because the guy was obviously and clearly insubordinate. And the six theocrats who have imposed compulsory Catholicism on the rest of the country gave him a pass. So as a result of that now, they said that personal religions and personal religious behavior takes precedence over the Congress and the country not establishing a state religion. Well, if on Friday you established a state religion, on Monday what you do is you reaffirm it. Religious liberty is dead in the United States. Dobbs and Kennedy both prove that. Now, Bremerton is, last I checked, very much a Navy town. And we know that the United States military is pretty well Jesused up. It was Chappie Klingenschmidt. Remember him? We haven't heard from him in a while. Out in Colorado Springs. He was a disgraced Navy chaplain because even though he had Muslims, atheists, Jews, what have you, to minister to, he insisted on praying in Jesus' name. And so the Navy shit-canned him. He would not be shit-canned today. So maybe there aren't a bunch of atheist kids playing football in the Bremerton School District. But that's really not the point. The point is the line at which so-called personal behavior begins to take on a compulsory flavor. And this is that. And in in Dobbs, the dissent was written jointly by the three dissenters. But Sonia Sotomayor wrote this one. And she was unsparing in her criticism. Among other things, she said, all of our rights are hanging in the balance. Today, the court once again weakens the backstop. It elevates one individual's interest in personal religious exercise in the exact time and place of that individual's choosing over society's interest in protecting the separation between church and state, eroding the protections for religious liberty for all. Today's decision is particularly misguided because it elevates the religious rights of a school official who voluntarily accepted public employment and the limits that public employment entails over those of his students who are required to attend school and who this court has long recognized are particularly vulnerable and deserving of protection. In so doing, the court sets us further down a perilous path in forcing states to entangle themselves with religion, with all of our rights hanging in the balance. As much as the court protests otherwise, today's decision is no victory for religious liberty. I respectfully dissent. One of these days, I'm going to read one of these dissents, and it's just going to say, y'all suck. Because they do. Now, interestingly, after his contract was not renewed, he didn't even reapply for his job. He just went ahead and got this Christian 501c3 tax-exempt law group to sue on his behalf. And in point of fact, the outfit representing him pretty much lied about the nature of the case, because the Bremerton school officials gave him, with no question, private places to pray. And that wasn't good enough, because it was not about his personal spirituality. Rather, it was about his desire to proselytize impressionable young minds. You know, a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit said that he was not engaging in private prayer, but was instead engaging in public speech of an overtly religious nature while performing his job duties. And honestly, the court's majority opinion today gives us no guidance on whether there are any limitations whatsoever. I make my snake handling jokes from time to time. This is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. This is, after Friday, this was like just another kick in the gut, because the two are intertwined. Dobbs and Kennedy are intertwined. They are this gang of theocrats saying that their allegiance to enforcing religious doctrines is more important to them than the actual freedom of actual Americans. It exists on a long continuum that includes things like Hobby Lobby and deeply held corporate religious beliefs. It's illegal in some states, I mentioned snake handling, for snake handling churches to exist. The original reason for the Religious Restoration Act, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or whatever the damn thing's called, was to get the government off of the backs of indigenous people so that they could quietly partake in their peyote and mushroom and cannabis ceremonies, because the use thereof is sacred. But the right wing and the well-funded religion industry got wind of it and said, oh, we're going to have fun with this. Because see, long before anybody was barking and grunting and hooting about Roe versus Wade, and I remember hearing this crap as a child. Backward, turn backward, O time in thy flight, make me a child again just for one night. I remember hearing them braying in the sanctuary about how that Supreme Court has taken God out of our public schools. Because an atheist named Madeline Murray O'Hare sued to stop public prayer in schools. Well, one way to understand the Kennedy decision today is to understand that Madeline Murray O'Hare has been given the boot. But another way to understand it is that there are no limits on what children can be forced to be subjected to. They worry about drag queen story hour. No. What if Coach is a snake handler? What if he wants to pour Crisco on their little heads before the basketball game? I mean, that's going to be a little rough when the Crisco starts dripping on the hardwood. What if Coach is sending in a play and suddenly begins speaking in tongues? You know, I deconstructed that stupid article from USA Today, that op-ed piece of the Muslim, the Jew, and the Christian who said that this case needed to be a winner for religious minorities to be able to practice their faith. They were making the argument that somehow or another this would, you know, if Kennedy lost here, that, I don't know, the Jewish coach or the chess club couldn't wear a kippah. Which is insane. But this court is insane. And here we are. You know, they're all gone home now, but, you know, the decisions are released. You know, they released Dobbs on Friday, hoping that it would just, you know, we'd get it out of our system over the weekend, and then they'd, you know, release some other lesser or different evils this week. But if you, you know, because in public schools, children have to attend public schools. The coach did not have to be a coach. The children's rights, the students' rights, would seem to be superior in this instance to those of the coach. He could go and get an assistant coaching job at some Jesus school. No, he wasn't willing. He wanted to force his religion, particularly on this school district, and the pettifoggers who represented him knew that this was a chance to destroy the religious liberty of countless millions of non-Christians. And here's the thing, as we approach the halfway point of this Morion Monday, right now, even as we speak, similar right-wing religion industry pettifoggers, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah, are trawling all over this country looking for plaintiffs to challenge Griswold. Plaintiffs to challenge Lawrence versus Texas. Plaintiffs to challenge Obergefell versus Hodges. And they will find them. Maybe they already have. I don't know, some aggrieved Catholic who will claim that their personal religious liberty is violated by your ability to purchase contraception. And guys, Again, it's not just about pills or IUDs, and sponges are gone. Patches or implants. It's about condoms, too. It's about vasectomies. You know, it's not like you can swan into St. God's Memorial Hospital and say, would you cut the cords leading from the boys to the outlet? Yeah, I don't want to make no babies. Oh, I'm sorry, my son. God gets us sad if we do that, so we can't do that. And you can't have that either. Because it is not past them to make an argument, specious though it is, that because other medical facilities perform vasectomies, that it infringes on the rights of Catholic hospitals and affects their ability to, I don't know, make a dollar. Dear friend checked in with me over the weekend and said, you know, I can tell how upset you were Friday because I have never heard you use the F word so many times in one broadcast. And I thought about that. And I do not wish to weaken my argument. I always remember what Kurt Vonnegut wrote in that one novel where he said, you know, he was a colonel in Vietnam, and he said, you will not hear me use vulgarities because that gives you an excuse not to listen to me. And what I have to say to you may be a life or death matter. Now, I'm certainly not in that position, but I'm trying. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I agree, Lady B. Sonia Sotomayor should have just written, fuck you, strongly worded dissent to follow. Seriously, who votes for the right of people to force their religious beliefs on others? How's that worked out for any country? And that's the thing. If anybody thinks I'm being too hard on Holy Mother Church, please understand I'm in good company. Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Monroe, Franklin. You know, Pennsylvania was founded by the Penn family. Franklin didn't much care for him. Bunch of Quakers. Massachusetts was a bunch of Puritans. Remember, everybody hated the Puritans so much that it was like, oh, you want to go to America? Cool. Because they'd already run from England to the Netherlands, and they came back and got on the Mayflower, and nobody wanted to be anywhere near them. And yes, curiously enough, specifically in the Dobbs decision, Alito kept the reference to Hale as a long-respected commenter on the common law. He sent women to their death for being witches. And yes, the same religion whose doctrine and dogma was used to take away the rights of women to control the workings of their own bodies on Friday sent countless thousands of women to their deaths as witches for doing things like suggesting that maybe after a baby was born, the baby should get, you know, wiped down, a bath. That maybe cleanliness was next to godliness. Nobody expects the Special Inquisition. And they were deeply suspicious because they had the example of history before them of what happened when religion got hold of the reins of government. And by the way, a minute ago when I said that they're trawling these pettifog and right-wing religion groups, you know, Alliance Defending Freedom. Ha! And the Thomas More Society and various and sundry other right-wing crank outfits. I may be using crank in multiple definitions of the word. Well, they are. They're trawling for plaintiffs, but There's one more thing I need to mention, because a few people have asked me over the weekend, you know, to sort of explain myself, and I did. This matters to me because I'm a woman. Dobbs matters to me because there's more at stake than abortion. Dobbs matters to me because I'm an American who cherishes freedom. And yeah, a couple have asked, are you going to be okay? Does this personally affect you? And the answer is yes. If you can criminalize an abortion, you can criminalize my access to the hormones that give me my life. You can criminalize my access to further surgery. They've already in Alabama criminalized access to gender-affirming care for minors. That has been enjoined by a federal judge, but it will be tried on its merits, and whatever the outcome, it will go up on appeal, and it will, and see, that's the thing. The case that strikes down Griswold may not be in the pipeline yet. The case that strikes down Obergefell may not be in the pipeline yet. The case that strikes down Lawrence may not be in the pipeline yet. But the case that strikes down trans people is already in the pipeline. I seem to be remembering more and more often the quote from Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, who said, the hogs are in the tunnel and they will travel on a road of bones. And once they get away with criminalizing medical procedures for trans kids, they'll criminalize medical procedures for trans adults, too. Even as we speak, because we've discussed it on this program. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, the white supremacist adjacent governor, if not white supremacist in toto, of Florida, who only became governor with the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis, is actively involved in compulsorily detransitioning trans adults who rely on things like Medicaid to receive their gender-affirming hormone therapy. Right now, the trans athletic ban has been in the pipeline from Idaho coming up on 2 years. It will not take that long for them, those cases, to wend their way to Washington, D.C. And I hope when this gang of theocratic miscreants rules against the very existence of trans kids, that we will be able to manage as much outrage as we have in the last 4 days. In other words, the outrage needs to become sustained outrage. And I know that's exhausting. God, I do. But complacency will be deadly. Somewhere in America right now, there are pregnant women who are contemplating suicide. And that crushes my soul. Consider this, though. Somewhere in America, there are men contemplating homicide because the women they have carelessly impregnated can't get an abortion. And it will, of course, be her fault. And he will beat her within an inch of her life or beyond. There really are statistics on pregnancies from incest in this country. What do you reckon Brother Daddy will do? the horror in this country is palpable. And there are, and there are international relations questions on this. Can a woman in Talibana seek political asylum in, say, Canada, because the full weight of the government of the United States has been turned against her? Might be good to find out. I saw one humorous little observation the other day. Canada must feel like it's in living in an apartment over a meth lab. I mean, over the course of the weekend, I actually began wondering what kind of hellish choice I might be forced to make. If it gets as bad as I expect it to be, will I have to leave my country? Is there a country somewhere else that will have me? Some big old Tran? What does this mean? Of course, if every person like me, trans guys, trans girls, non-binaries, upped and left, there's a whole lot of the country would take, it's fine. I mean, that's only 1.3 million Americans. We are a failed state at this point. And we've been one for a very long time, actually. This is just a shoe that we've been waiting to hear drop for a long, for God, longer than a lot of people in this country have been alive. They unlaced the shoe with Bush v. Gore. Perhaps earlier. But Bush v. Gore is a good place to begin the analysis. God, where are we? And why are we in this handcar? Subject line, future coach Matt in San Francisco writes, "Hi Robin, hi Matt. With the latest court decision, I've decided to take up high school football coaching. I can't wait to get out there on the 50-yard line, put down my prayer rug, point myself towards Mecca, and start praying my ass off. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine, seeing as the Supremes have decided to knock down that pesky separation of church and state. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?" Yeah. Gotta do it 4 or 5 times a day, too. Better hope the game doesn't go into overtime, Matt. That could be problematic. Well, Ron and Raleigh, you're right. Lochner versus New York. It hasn't been mentioned, but the Lochner decision was based on the principle of substantive due process, which is like all of the rights in the crosshairs of these theocratic swine based on the 14th Amendment. At some point, some of our corporate overlords like Bezos or Schultz or Musk will decide that privity of contract, which is, by the way, an absolute made-up bullshit term, needs to be reconsidered. I can't see how this group could help but overturn Lochner. Shit's just starting to get good. It's back to indentured servitude. Oh yeah, and that's just pure libertarianism.
Well, the free market will take care of workplace safety regulations.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, don't leave this conversation all to me, please. And by the way, we are down to
What did I say? 1250? No, 1225. So we're getting close to, if my math is off, tell me. But we're getting close to being fully funded up to this day. If we could raise another 325, we would be fully funded through this day. We are at 1225 to finish the month of June. Sorry to have to do it this way, but they won't let me print my own money. Maybe if I said I was doing it for Jesus! Oh, well, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy, a cowbell for the canoe joke. We all know we need more laughs these days to deal with the overload of stress. I'll keep trying to come up with more of those old chestnuts. But I'm desperately in search of silver linings. Oh, yet another cowbell. I didn't even award myself that cowbell. And then there's a second one. Yet another cowbell, Jeremy says. I see what you've not implied, yet slightly implied. Praying coaches in overtime, you know, sudden death. Off with their heads! Yeah. Vulgarity. Jeremy asks, doesn't our The United States fear of vulgarity and nudity and the like come out from religions first? You know, the Puritans, deeply religious people. I don't intend on living by similar beliefs. Swear away, fuckers. Yeah, I know. But it's Calvinism. It's proto-Calvinism, Calvinism, and now we live in an era of neo-Calvinism. But again, silver linings, and I'm deadly in earnest about this. I spent too much time engaging in internet self-harm over the weekend, reading the whole damn Dobbs decision and all the concurrences and the dissent. The only thing that made remotely even any sense was the dissent, and it made it in boatloads. But at the core of that is the idea that a constitutional right that is not clearly enumerated cannot be held to exist. And hence what I see as our silver lining. That's this. We all know what the Second Amendment says. We all know, and see, this is what these fuckers don't understand. They're not as smart as they think they are. I mean, the Kennedy case would have made James Madison and Alexander Hamilton vomit, as would the case up in Maine giving taxpayer dollars to religious hate schools. But the only part, and you've got to understand, Heller versus D.C., that was authored by Fat Dead Tony, creates a right out of thin air, just like Sammy Bad Breath said happened in Roe. You can read the Second Amendment text from now till 2 years from now, and you will never find in there an actual statement that there is a private right, a private constitutional right to own a goddamn gun. The word gun existed at the time of the framing of the Constitution. Firearm existed. Blunderbuss existed. Matchlock existed. And we even have notes on the ratification.
And there is nothing really to indicate that the framers wanted to make sure that everybody could own whatever the latest technological marvel in firearms manufacturing was. It is only as recent as Heller versus DC that Fat Dead Tony, another one of these hardcore right-wing Catholics, found, you know, it was invisible, it was kind of magic, an individual right to own a firearm. And that's important. The Second Amendment does not empower or enable the existence of the United States military in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Thank you, Governor Jim. It just doesn't. And so when one constitutional right can be simply thrown out like dirty dishwater, others can too. I personally find that absolutely goddamn terrifying. But the majority in Dobbs does not. Nor do they find it terrifying to put the private religious views of some wackadoodle over the rights of children who have to attend school on a compulsory basis. And therein we have another commonality between Dobbs and Kennedy. Compulsory religious behavior. But what this all means is that if there's a member of Congress out there with the courage screwed to the sticking place, a single sentence might solve so many of this country's ills. The Second Amendment of this Constitution be and is hereby repealed. There is no, second sentence, there is no constitutional right to own any firearm.
Oh, they're coming to get my guns!
No. No, sugar. We're just going to leave it up to the states and their elected representatives, just like you wanted it left up to the states and their elected representatives to deal with a woman's right to manage the workings of her own body. Which seems a hell of a lot more intimate to me than whether or not one is able to own an AR-15 because it makes their pecker feel all stiff and manly. We can do it. Repeal the Second Amendment, and if Talibama wants to create a personal right to own firearms in Talibama, get with it, Cleta I. Do her up. But, also, we could pass legislation on a national basis saying that Congress has, what was the analysis used by the court in Dobbs? A rational basis, which is the lowest level of review you can really have, a rational basis. That means that they didn't come up with the idea when they were drunk out of their minds and didn't know shit from shinola. Just a rational basis. Congress could pass a law that says, whereas the Congress has a rational basis in trying to reduce the number of massacres of fourth graders in little elementary schools, the sale of AR-15 shall hereby be banned. And whereas the government of the United States has a rational basis in making sure that people injured who survive firearms accidents are adequately compensated and not pauperized and immiserated by something that was no fault of their own, Any firearm owner in the United States shall be and hereby is required to carry $1 million worth of liability insurance related specifically to accidental discharges of firearms. You know, oops, blam, pray. Hi, Joey. And the gun just went off. Completely legal. The only way you lose your right to have a gun is if your state doesn't permit gun ownership or somehow restricts gunner ownership or mention mentions in its statutes that there are registration and licensing and training requirements. And it's all according to the Dobbs decision, perfectly legal. Bye-bye. I mean, look, if those supreme, puissant, majestic Catholic majority on the Supreme Court can take away the most sacred right that a woman has, well, sauce for gander, sauce for goose, take away the most sacred right man has. And you know what would happen if we did that with the Second Amendment? There'd be a lot less murdered women. And a lot less murdered school children. Oh, by the way, that's another story that's out there. This is sickening. Down in Uvalde, Texas, the mama who told the fucking cops to fuck off and saved her own children from Rob Ebel Elementary School, Angeli Rose Gomez, saved her children from almost certain death, and she told News 4 San Antonio that she's being now being harassed by the chicken shit cops from Uvalde. She said, "The other night we were exercising and we had a cop parked at the corner, like flickering us with his headlights." And she's living apart from her sons right now just so they don't feel like they have to watch cops passing by, stopping, parking. This is what one calls a strong woman, because she refuses to be quiet. Well-behaved women seldom make history. She's in the process of getting... use the language of the locale, fixing to sue that chicken shit police department for their hour-long wait while children were being slaughtered. She's openly and actively calling for the Uvalde school police chief, Pete Arredondo, to be sacked. And so the cops behave in typically cop fashion, because they're the biggest gang on the block. And let's run over real quick, like, to Hotlanta. Funny, we were just talking about the Second Amendment. Two women worked at an Atlanta area subway. The two women had only recently taken a job at Subway. The manager, Willie Glenn, the co-owner of the Subway on Northside Drive. Oh, my God. I used to drive Northside Drive all the time. It was on the way home. But the subway on Northside Drive in downtown Atlanta, they're the model employees. And, well, this is one of those we'll have to check back because the cops are still looking, you know, because, you know, nobody called him in or anything and did their job for him. Because a guy with a gun blew away one of the two women and sent the other one into critical surgery at a hospital in Atlanta because he was upset because he thought there was too much mayonnaise on his sandwich. Willie Glenn, the aforementioned co-owner, said, "It just breaks my heart to know that someone has the audacity to point a weapon and shoot someone for as little as too much mayonnaise on a sandwich." God, we're back to those old Time Life ads that you used to see all the time back in the 70s. Time Life proudly presents the Old West. Each month, you'll receive another book detailing the wildness of the Wild West. You'll learn about John Wesley Hardin, a man so mean he once shot a man just for snoring. No shit. Well, it's where we are. This is what our theocratic Supreme Court values more than a woman being able to make decisions about the reproductive workings of her own body. Dude carried a weapon, an engine of death, a firearm, into subway because what? The ISIS was going to come by and start shooting? Or maybe he was just a chicken shit, afraid to live in the world without a piece of firearms craftsmanship. You put too much mayonnaise on my sandwich. I'm sorry. Bang! Bang! I wish that was not a true story. I wish we were just making shit up here. But it is real. It is real. It is real. Robin, Robin, Robin. Oh, Matt, you're going to be getting a nasty gram from the from Ron and Raleigh's lawyers. I don't know, maybe there's an argument. Bob, Bob, Bob. It's a dangerous path, Matt says, to use logic and consistency with this Supreme Court. The majority doesn't even believe in their own 98-page bullshit opinion. They're just so obviously making shit up. So you can't use their own writings to try to apply it to the Second Amendment because that would be consistent and logical. And that's something with which they up with which they will not put. Sammy Bad Breath will come up with some tortured, twisted reasoning why guns are different because guns are deeply rooted in history and tradition. Yeah, ask the Kennedy family. Plus, we all know that, one, Jesus had a Colt 45. Two, life begins at conception and ends in a mass shooting at high school. Oh, and three, we've always been at war with Oceania. Yes, yes, we have, yes. And East Asia, yes. Yeah, that's quality stuff, man. Suddenly I'm thinking about, what was his name during the witch hysteria? He was an asshole in his own right, but he wouldn't knuckle under, and so they instead of burning him or hanging him, they pressed him to death with stones, and his last words were, "More weight." Yeah. So that's 2 hours worth of Philip Robster. Let's run over to the stress line, see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, sweetie.
Hey, Tracy. How are you, dear?
Well, I'm just stuck in traffic. I was on my way. My very first trip today was from LAX to Burbank, and I'm like, no, that's the wrong direction. Because now I got to come back to the airport. So I decided, well, since I have to be stuck in traffic, I'm going to do a a side trip and go get dim sum.
That new place you were telling me about?
Yes.
Any idea what you're getting?
So I'm going to get the, yes, scallion pancakes.
Ooh,
juicy,
those are so yummy.
Dumplings. And something with shrimp, I think. And then I'm going to, you know, since I, if I'm going to, if it's going to take me 40 minutes to get to the airport, anyway, I might as well. Well, actually, it's taken, it took me almost an hour just to get to this point. So,
oh,
yeah.
Nice.
But now, since I'm heading west anyway, so now I'm just going to maneuver and go around the back way that I go anyhow. So, yeah. Anyway, so how are you?
I'm not okay, but I'm sort of trying to cope.
You're like, I'm here. I'm functioning. It's like, I'm here. I'm functioning. Don't ask me too much more past that. Is that where we are right now?
Yeah. I mean, I really... I thought about going out and hitting a trail earlier today, but then I thought better of it and went and got blueberry pancakes for my granddaughter.
We'll see. Right there. See, you know, this is what you do. I think blueberry pancakes is a staff that we all need right now.
They're very good. They are very good. And they do and they do breakfast. They do breakfast all day.
Ooh. Just all day is awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I had some eggs. And I said, y'all got any cream cheese back there? And they went, yeah. Could you, like, melt a bunch of cream cheese into the scrambled eggs? And they were like, yeah. So I was happy.
Now, again, see, there's not much that we can control, you know. But what we have, you know, as far as food is concerned and the things that'll make us happy, somewhat happy, you know. Oh, speaking of food, so there's this ice cream place in the valley. Well, the first time I've ever heard of this place was way back, and it was this place called Handel's Ice Cream, and there was this San Bernardino County, and everything is handmade. There's no imitation, anything. It's just straight up, this is real ice cream. So this reminded me, because I just pulled into a parking lot where this Arby's has the orange cream shake that I might have to get a taste of that.
Can I help?
Okay, it's a horrible?
Yes, it's not what you hope it's going to be. Miss it.
Okay, never mind. Okay, so anyway, they had Orange Dream ice cream, which tasted like, you know, Orange Dream, you know, Dreamsicle or whatever it used to be called. And then I mixed that with, are you ready?
Bring it.
Coconut pineapple ice cream.
Now see, at that point, you're getting perilously close to the orange pineapple ice cream that I love down in Florence.
And so they made that into a shake for me.
Nice.
And it was the most wonderful thing ever.
I know. Sometimes I get the orange pineapple made into a milkshake.
It was sublime. It was just, oh, God. I just, you know, again, the little things that make us happy. And we have, like you said, we have to concentrate on those things, because to do otherwise is just giving in to depression. And I know it's very difficult right now to not give in to depression because it's a hot mess right now. And then on top of it, the fact that it's fucking hot. Like right now, well, I'm in LA right now, but yesterday when I was running errands, it was a fucking 105 degrees.
Mm.
You 105 degrees. And I was just beside myself because I had to do all this stuff in this heat. And my air conditioner was doing something not very good.
Oh, see, that was what I was waiting for.
Yeah, in the car. But the good news is, I got it fixed. I went to see my mechanic this morning. And so what it was that my Freon needed to be recharged, and there's a little leak in my compressor, but nothing detrimental. It can wait to get fixed. So there's that. And so, yeah, it's just, this has been the last few days. I turned off network television and just watch stupid shit on television. I haven't looked at all at anything on social media because I already know what people are feeling and saying. And I'm just like, I'm not going to engage. I'm just going to kind of disconnect and think about what I can do.
Speaking of disconnecting, we've been talking about this for a while. Started 1883 last night.
Oh. Well, like I told you how I feel about it.
Yeah, I've never seen a single episode of Yellowstone. But it seems to stand up. But you know, I think we need national legislation now that anytime Sam Elliott appears in a film or a TV show or an ad
or TV show,
his mustache gets separate billing. It's Sam Elliott starring Sam Elliott, also starring Sam Elliott's mustache.
Yes. Sam Elliott's mustache. Yes.
But his character, not giving anything away, kind of a protagonist, sort of, as far as I can tell so far after one episode. But it took me a minute to read the fine print on the badges and his partner's badge. They're Pinkertons.
The brother?
Yeah, the brother. They're Pinkertons.
Oh, they're Pinkertons. Well, see, I did watch, because you can't, Sam Elliott is a national treasure.
Yes.
Because he is. And so,
Have he and Samuel L. Jackson ever worked together on anything? Because that's a super friends that needs to happen.
No, I don't think so.
But wouldn't you love?
No, I don't think so.
Because, I mentioned Sam Jackson because
as long as Quentin Tarantino has nothing to do with it.
Okay, fair enough. But I mentioned Sam Jackson because he had some choice words this weekend.
Well, I can only imagine.
He went after Slappy. Yeah, it was. I mean,
How bad?
Oh, it was not nice. Because he was coming from the perspective of an angry black man.
Which he has the right to be because...
And so he just got on Twitter and said, How's Uncle Clarence feeling about overturning Loving versus Virginia?
Yes!
Called him Uncle Clarence.
You know, since you want to, since this, you know, all this stuff needs to be revisited. So, bitch, why come you didn't talk about Loving v. Virginia?
Right, and in point of fact, as Ron and Raleigh pointed out on Friday, Griswold actually happens before Loving, and Loving is grounded in Griswold.
Oops.
But he went after Slappy, and then, Howard Stern and Robin Givens went after him today.
Ooh.
I mean, not Robin Givens, Robin Quivers. I'm so ashamed. Robin Quivers. I don't listen to the program, but... He went on the air today. Howard did. He said, "We're gonna party like it's 1959," which was pretty good. And then he and Robin went back and forth. Howard said, "The whole mess we're in with that lightweight Clarence Thomas, who's been sitting there like Darth Vader, dormant, waiting for other kooks to join the Supreme Court and waiting through the decades." And then, then Robin Quivers chimed in and said that, maybe he wants to rethink moving the nation back to more conservative times. And then said, "I hope they roll it all the way back to slavery and then slap him on a plantation."
Yep.
Now, I would never say anything like that.
But I would.
But she has, you know, she has the status and stature to say that.
Because I'm tired of him. I'm tired of Herschel Walker. I'm just tired of all of them.
Well, you saw that press release I sent you earlier today.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't that just charming?
Mm-hmm. I'm just tired.
But let me. Black activists celebrate Supreme Court's protection of religious freedom. This is Project 21, Black Leadership Network. And they actually jointly filed an amicus curiae brief in the Bremerton versus Kennedy case.
I'm looking at the menu, Robin, of what I'm going to order. Braised pork over rice bowl.
That sounds good, but if you see the word pork belly anywhere in there, jump.
I love pork belly.
Yeah.
Love it. And more than likely, it probably is. But I'm just tired of these cooning as Negroes, because, you know, the conversation, you know, again, y'all, I don't ever want anything to ever happen to anybody that they need to be reminded that they are Black, but now I kind of want them to have a situation where they are reminded that they are Black, because there has to be a reckoning.
Hey, are you ready for a soundbite?
Sure, I'm pulled over. Go for it.
Adams County Fairgrounds, Quincy, Illinois, this weekend. where a member of the House of Representatives who's fighting for her political life, a woman named Mary Miller, had one of those misspeak moments.
Don't give it away. Okay.
Because
Harriet had a field day with that.
There's some backstory to this. It wasn't long back. She was at a Moms for America rally in Washington, where she unburdened herself of the following. Hitler was right on one thing. He said, "Whoever has the youth has the future." Now she had only been sworn in as a member of the House for 2 days. And she said she misspoke then, too, and said, "I sincerely apologize for any harm my words caused and regret using a reference to one of the most evil dictators in history to illustrate the dangers that outside influences can have on our youth." Misspoke my ass. So then...
These people don't misspeak.
When they tell you who they are, believe them.
Believe them.
So she's probably just overwhelmed with that warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow, because Nitwit Nero was standing right behind her, undressing her with his eyes.
God damn you, Robin.
Yeah, I know, because she was wearing a little blue sleeveless sheath and had her hair all freshly bleached like he likes it blonde. And she said...
"President Trump, on behalf of all the MAGA patriots in America, I want to thank you for the historic victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday."
And then starts clapping. The victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday. Now, see, you could say, you know, maybe that was a mistake. I mean, I stumble over words all the time here. But I don't...
No, you don't.
Not like that, because, see, one, she's got a history of praising Hitler. And two, one, as we know, of the favorite tropes of the right wing in this country is, as Tuckio Rose, the testicle toaster, has pointed out, hundreds of times, great replacement theory that says, of course, that the decent white people in America are being replaced by the mongrel races. And so when she calls it a victory for white life, she meant victory for white life. Now, her spokes creep, she has a spokes creep. Isaiah Wortman, contacted by the Associated Press, he put on the demeanor of the tiger and said, "Mary stumbles while saying right to life and the fake news vultures are out." Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to check something. This clip may end too soon, but I'm just curious here. Let's go back here for a second.
"For white life in the Supreme Court yesterday."
Yeah, that's what I wanted to find out. The assembled maggots didn't misunderstand her. The victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday. And what do the maggots do?
Yesterday.
They have fucking applauded.
The white people cheered for a victory for white life.
White life.
I mean, do you remember when a man on dog, Bro Fromix, the fetus fondler, Rick Sanctum Santorum, said he objected to welfare for black people, and he said, Oh, I didn't mean to say blah. I meant blah, people.
Yeah, nobody believed that either.
No.
No.
See, the problem with these people is that they think we're stupid.
I mean, what were the maggots chanting when they marched? They engaged in their horrifying display in Charlottesville, Virginia, in 2017. Tracy, what did they say then?
They will not replace us.
Jews will not replace us.
Jews will not replace us. Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Jews will not replace us. Because, you know. And see, this is what I don't understand about, you know, people who look like me, who feel as though, you know, they don't, that what happened with them, you know, but it's like for those people who are Jewish and vote for these people, and the people who are black who vote for these people. And I'm like, yo, homie, this bitch just said for white life. And here you are, you know, Herschel. And all you other fools, you know, voting for these people. And I'm just like, whatever. What the fuck ever. I don't get it. And I just don't understand why they think that once, when all this shit starts going down, that they won't, they're not going to come for them.
Well,
what I just don't understand.
Well, because they're good. They're good ones.
Carleon and Candace and Larry Elder and Michael Steele and, oh wait, did Stacey Dash, I know she tried to come back to get her invitation back to the cookout. Nah, bitch, you're done. We don't forgive.
Well,
all these people.
Yeah. And it's just not going to, because they think the wealth privilege will sort of bleach out some of their blackness?
No, it will not. And then let's not forget about the white folk, our sister Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, please.
Don't
get me started on Kate.
You know, I'm like, oh, my goodness.
You know, the hardest thing about being trans is trying to figure out what to wear every morning.
She said that out loud?
Oh, yeah. Yep. But we've had another slappy, sighting.
Uh-oh.
The Supreme Court actually today... And I guess this is the you know, we got a little victory, so yay. Way long ago, I mean, going all the way back to when I came back to radio filling in for Dr. Bill in 2003. Holy shit, 19 years ago. Well, there were stories about this guy named D. James Kennedy. And he was running a hustle called Coral Ridge Ministries. And he had, and he turned a little Presbyterian church into a mega church. And among other things, he had run pictures of children in his newsletter with the caption, "Sex with children? Homosexuals say yes." And that was not by any means the fullness and extent of it. He was a hate preacher, and he was an acolyte of the toxic and filthy R.J. Rush Dooney. R.J. Rush Dooney, most gay people know, became infamous for suggesting, which curiously enough, his progeny are still saying, that gay people should just be executed for their gayness, you know, by the state. So here's the thing. The Southern Poverty Law Center in 2010 issued a report called 18 Anti-Gay Groups and Their Propaganda. And it listed Coral Ridge Ministries as a hate group. Well, it's taken a while. This gives you an idea of how long a Supreme Court case can take to develop. But Coral Ridge Ministries, Coral Snake Ministries, sued the SPLC, saying that they had been defamed as an organization because the Southern Poverty Law Center named them an anti-LGBTQ hate group. And oddly enough, 8 members of the Supreme Court said, nope. Not going to take this case. But not Slappy. Oh, no. Slappy was, of course, deeply aggrieved and wrote, SPLC's hate group designation lumped Coral Ridge's Christian ministry with groups like the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazis. It placed Coral Ridge on an interactive online hate map and caused Coral Ridge concrete financial injury by excluding it from Amazon Smile donation program. Nonetheless, unable to satisfy the almost impossible actual malice standard this court has imposed, Coral Ridge could not hold SPLC to account for what it maintains was a blatant falsehood. In other words, Coral Ridge lied.
They got a pass.
Coral Ridge lied and said they weren't a hate group, even though there was a mountain of evidence suggesting otherwise. And what they were trying to do, they were trying to find the case to use to overturn New York Times versus Sullivan, because that's also on their fetish list. Be aware. The actual malice standard for public figures. Because Nitwit Nero told them that that's what he wanted done. So this doesn't mean that all 8 agree that they weren't a hate group, or that they were a hate group. This means that the other five toxic fucks said, wait, this isn't the case. There's going to be a better case comes down the line with a better group of tax-exempt pettifoggers, and we'll take that, and then we'll overturn New York Times versus Sullivan. And always remember, when we're thinking about how evil Clarence Thomas and Slappy are, I don't know the precise number of clerks that they get, probably 2 or 3 or 4, but these are little punk-ass shits who come from Harvard and Yale and UVA, University of Michigan, Stanford, and they all come from the right wing, you know, from the right wing toxic fetid cesspits that exist inside each of those vaunted law schools. And every one of them pursues one of those clerkships, hoping, because they've been indoctrinated in undergrad and graduate and law school, that their natural place in the world is to come in and further the theocracy. So this grunting about concrete financial industry and comparing them to the Klan and neo-Nazis, That was probably actually written by some little shitbird a year out of law school from Harvard or Yale, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So this wasn't the victory we thought it was, but at least he didn't win on this one. You know, die mad about it, Slappy. Die mad about it. Oh, and I need to run to the. Go ahead.
No. I'm tired of these people, and is this really makes it like it's. Clarence Thomas was a sleeper cell onto himself.
Yeah.
He's been sitting there since, what, 1990 what?
91, I think.
Or 1980.
91?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that? Yeah, because George H.W. Bush appointed him. And he did so after the failure of the Bork nomination, because Bork... Sorry, sounds like the Swedish Chef on the Muppets, you know. Bork, 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 bork. But Bork came in there six guns a-blazing talking about how the vagina havers didn't have no right to no abortions. And they actually stood up to him. And then when that failed, they put a black man up, knowing that there would be sufficient white guilt on the Senate Committee on the Judiciary to get him through. And the proof was in the pudding, of course.
Mm-hmm.
A woman came in, stuck her hand in the air and a hand on a Bible, and swore to tell the truth, Anita Hill, and they slimed her and slimed her and slimed her. But it was Clarence who pogo-sticked up onto the cross and referred to himself being subjected to a high-tech lynching.
High-tech lynching.
You know, there's lynching, and then there's what happened to Clarence Thomas. And the two have absolutely nothing in common. I mean, the fact that Clarence Thomas is still alive kind of proves it wasn't a lynching.
Can we do, like, what was that? What was that, boys and girls? Was that, like, false equivalency there, buddy?
Yeah, a little bit. And by the way, Clarence Thomas, says Matt in San Francisco, is the reason there's a saying, watch out for the quiet ones. Because he has remained quiet almost since he got on. It was years and years and years. He was famous for never even bothering to speak during oral arguments.
Mm-hmm. Sleeper cell onto himself.
There you go. And think about how many clerks he's turned out in those years. And yes, a bunch of them are on the bench. I mean, think about Bat Dead Tony and Slappy. If I'm not mistaken, there's at least one member of the Supreme Court who actually clerked for Slappy. On there now. Let me ask Dr. Google. I think I know, but I could be wrong. Just give me a second. Sorry about the dead air. Trying to keep my relatability to myself. Saving it for my friends. Oh, I'm sorry. The handmaid clerked for Fat Dead Tony.
Oh, okay.
So, but we.
And I didn't know until you talked about it on Friday. I didn't know. Did not know that Clarence Thomas. He's Catholic.
Yes.
Yeah, so you mentioned that on Friday. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Let's see. Brett Kavanaugh clerked for old Balls and Strikes. And curiously, and you know, birds of a feather. Bratt also clerked for a guy in the Ninth Circuit named Alex Kaczynski. Ever heard of him?
No.
Well, Alex Kaczynski was a serial sexual harasser and alleged serial assaulter, credibly accused by more than 15 women, including one of his own clerks, Catherine Koo. She said his chambers, where three or four law clerks, one or two judicial assistants, and one or more judicial externs typically worked at a given time, was a hostile, demeaning, and persistently sexualized environment. And as soon as the first 15 women accused him, well, he retired. And that kept any further charges from being investigated.
But did he retire with his full pension and all that, though?
Oh, hell yeah. Let's see. He brought one clerk in, call clerk Heidi Bond, and he pulled up pornography on his computer and said, "You think this is Photoshopped, or hey, does this arouse you sexually?" And then sat there and interrogated her about why she said it didn't. Another clerk said he brought her into his chambers and showed her an open-legged image of a male figure naked.
Yeah. See, this is. I'm about to put you on mute for one quick second. Talk amongst yourself.
Okay. Yeah, now this is the guy who helped shape the career of a current sitting Supreme Court justice. Not that anybody was allowed to ask him about it while he was throwing his temper tantrum during his confirmation hearings. A former U.S. Court of Federal Claims judge by the name of Christine O.C. Miller, she's 73 or thereabouts, said, around early 1986, Kaczynski grabbed and squeezed each of her breasts as the two drove back from an event in Baltimore. After she told him she didn't want to stop at a motel and fuck.
See, I don't understand why these people are allowed to keep their pension. To me, I mean, like you said, he retired before any charges can be brought. But misconduct, like, for example, I don't know, this woman was married to this guy who was still seeing his ex, you know, and the ex was a cop. She killed the woman, but had gotten away with it for years, you know. And so finally, when, you know, long story short, she got caught, you know, DNA and all that. And she's in jail. But guess what? She gets her full pension.
Yeah.
Even though she was convicted, and I think her pension is like something like $80,000 a year or something like that. So, yeah, she gets her full pension, even though she's a convicted murderer.
Well, and see, what's important in this case is that Bratt was clerking for Kaczynski during the time when Kaczynski was sexually harassing, abusing, and assaulting members of his own staff. So it's a little bit like Jim Jacketoff. It's a little bit like Jim Jacketoff Jordan, insofar as, you know, there's abundant testimony that Jim Jacketoff Jordan was informed about and looked away from the team doctor at The Ohio State University raping young men. Well, in this case,
and did nothing.
Bratt was right there at the same time that his boss, from whom he needed an excellent recommendation, because he damn sure wanted to be a Supreme Court justice someday. He'd been groomed for it since he went to that shithole Jesuit school where they taught little boy, the young men to hate women. And so there's every likelihood in the world he at least heard about what Kaczynski was up to and remained mute. Because, of course, Brat had his own secrets to hide. You know, the boofing.
Right, so why would he...
The boofing and...
Mutual, what is it? Mutual destruction?
Right, yeah. So, well, I mean, but, you know, he wanted the recommendation, but by the same token, he also understood why guys do those kind of things.
This is boys being boys there, Robin.
It's just locker room behavior.
Locker room behavior. I'm so tired of that bullshit. You know, it's like I was watching, and God help me for watching it. Don't judge me. I was watching Blue Bloods. I typically stay away from TV shows that are overly pro-police. But anyway, there was this episode, and there was a Filipino cop. And these fellow cops were giving him shit about a dish, you know, a Filipino dish that was made of chicken feet or something. And it was horrible. And the sergeant called, you know, said, yo, what are y'all doing? And basically the guy's like, just leave it alone because that's just the way things are done. And I know how that feels being a minority or marginalized person and having, you know, your culture or the way you look or anything belittled, but you're supposed to just, you know, go with the flow. We're not, you know, it's just a joke. It's just harmless fun. Why are you being so sensitive? Now, here, because I fell asleep, so I didn't finish watching the whole episode. So, trip this. So, you know, the cop, you know, the white savior cop, basically, was, you know, trying to get the guy to stand up and all this. But the guy, so he did wind up filing a good play with the EEOC against the white savior cop. Because he wouldn't leave it alone. But just the fact that these people, his fellow police officers, knew that nothing would happen to them for being vicious. This is the country we live in now. That we as minority and marginalized people have to take being made fun of and all that, and we, you know, we're supposed to be okay with it because, you know, we don't want anybody to think we're overly sensitive.
Oof. Well, a little bit of breaking news as we get to the close of the program. By the way, we got $25 to go to actually get down to, down to $300 behind now that the show's over, but. $1,225 to finish the month. But anyway, breaking news, the Office of Inspector General, federal agents, it has come to light last week, seized the cell phone of Dr. Dr. Couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody, John Eastman, you know, the maggot lawyer who tried to pressure Mike Pence And he's thrown a fit and said, well, I never worked for the Justice Department, so the Inspector General can't seize my phone. This guy made a lot of money as a lawyer. Trying to figure out how that one works, but initially the court said, no. But he filed papers today asking a judge to order the cell phone returned to him. It was seized as a result of a search warrant.
And how's that working out for him?
Yeah, that was the day that he got... They forced him out in his pajamas. That's unconstitutional. Force a man out in his pajamas.
Why is it that is not unconstitutional to take away the woman's right to choose?
Oh, and by the way, Billable Rick told me that Whoopi has also unloaded on Slappy. Yeah, Whoopi said, you better hope that they don't come for you, Clarence, and say you should not be married to your wife who happens to be white, because they will move back. And you better hope nobody says, you know, well, you're not in the Constitution. You're back to being a quarter of a person. Ow.
Yeah. All these things. All of them. Not all, but all of them.
Oh, and Ron and Raleigh pointed out, Michael Steele has lately seemed to embrace his inner blackness. Inner? He's been showing up more on MSNBC and sounding downright contrite. Still not to be trusted as far as I can throw his self-hating ass, but, you know.
Oh, No. You were, the chairman or the RNC?
Yeah, he was the chair of the RNC time that the RNC young Republicans were throwing parties in strip clubs.
Yeah, you don't get a pass. Nobody, again. I don't care how many times you apologize. I mean, okay, it's supposed to be forgiving and stuff like that. No, I don't trust you.
Forgiveness has to be preceded by contrition.
Right. I don't believe you. I don't... believe anything out of your fucking mouth. And just because you're being paid, motherfucker, to be on MSNBC. So it's not like you are at the local, Boys and Girls Club and all that and trying to change young black lives and telling them, don't drink the Kool-Aid and act as though, just because the Republicans are smiling in your face right now doesn't mean that they won't turn on you.
Wait, wasn't there a song?
In a heartbeat.
Wasn't there a song once? They're smiling in your face all the time.
They're going to take your place. Those
backstabbers. Yes, I thought so. Old DJ moment. Yeah.
I believe it was the Spinners.
No, not the Spinners.
I think it was the OJs.
Yeah, it sounds like, I think that's the OJs. They had more of an edge than the Spinners did.
Yeah, the Spinners was, games people play.
Rubber band man.
Yes.
I mean, it had a great beat and you could dance to it, but social... biting social commentary, Rubber Band Man wasn't.
Nah.
By the way, Jude just dropped me a note and said, I'm trying to put together a package to send with Chris with gifts for you, Tracy, Tracy and Billable, since Chris will be visiting them soon. The gifts are from the shores of my former small beach home. Yes, giving it my best to have them arrive before he arrives in L.A., or heads to L.A.
Oh,
that's sweet.
Yeah,
thank you, Jude.
Yeah, thank you. He should be, I think he's coming Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not sure. Yeah, we're not getting together until Sunday. And all that good stuff. But I'm very excited to get together because it's been a while since I've been at a poker table, so I'm kind of scratching like a crack.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went there. I mean, it's bad. I'm like, and it's so funny because Jan and I are going on vacation. I think she pointed out that there will be no vacation. This is our very first vacation. We will not be anywhere near a casino. it's all, kinda surprised, you know.
Kind of surprised you made that. Kind of surprised you made that choice.
I could have went somewhere with the casino, but I decided not to, because I'm like, you know, I need to go somewhere and realize that the whole world does not revolve around gambling. As quiet as it's kept, you know. So
Listen. I've never been there, but I have one piece of advice: stay on the paths.
What? Oh yeah.
Stay on the paths, because you don't want to find out about the Fair de Lance.
I don't want to find out about the what?
Fair de Lance. FERDELANCE. Fair de Lance.
And that means?
The rattlesnakes and copperheads are like, yeah, we're poisonous pit vipers, but we're no Fair de Lance.
Oh, it's like that. Okay.
And they are homies in Central American jungles.
Awesome! This is freaking awesome. You know, far be it for me to, you know... Yeah, no, I'm not. The only thing we're doing off of the resort is we're doing a cruise to do a half of the Panama Canal. Because the full canal thing is damn near a 12-hour day. And I'm not spending 12 hours anywhere. But does that include, you know, poker and slot machines? So, yeah, that's everything else is just kind of winging it, you know? And a friend of mine, the guy does my locks, he has friends that live in Panama. So he's going to hook us up together so we can, you know, hang out. Or what have you, because nothing better than hanging with people who are local to the area. So, yeah. It's going to be... Wait, before I forget, did you say that you needed $25 to make it for today?
Well, no, that
to
would...
pay
that
for
would,
the show? Or?
No. That would get us down to only paying for today through... That would finish us off completely for last week.
For last week. Okay. And then anything extra will go into this week, the end of the month, yeah?
Yeah, we're at $1,200 to end the month.
Okay, so, because I'm not doing really well at the airports today, but I could do $25 challenge. And so then that will at least in... if that's meant, and then
that'd get us started on today.
Yes. That part. So $25 against Fuck the Supreme Court Challenge.
Yes, a brand new Fuck the Supreme keep on fucking the Supreme Court. Yes.
With hot poker, no grease, no spit, no nothing. Yeah, I said that. And all that, and everything
thank you, Tracy. And because it is Moran Monday, we got to end with a Moran. You're going to love this. I don't know if you know it or not, but Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, Jethreen Bodine, won the Arkansas Republican gubernatorial primary.
No, I did not.
Yeah, she done did. And she said a thing
Hmm. Yeah. She said that in Arkansas, oh my, get the hockey puck. Matt sent this along and said, you know, this woman is depraved. She said, in Arkansas now that Roe has been overturned, kids are going to be as safe in the womb as they are in the classroom.
No, she did not.
Yes, ma'am, she did. And I think she said
these
it sober.
These people are just, I don't even think the word reprehensible. Wow. Just motherfucking wow. And
I'm looking to see if I've got the audio.
Oh no, there's audio.
Yeah, she was proud of it. Oh yeah, there's audio. Yeah, this is a moment. Jethrine Bodine, the woman who has told so many lies and on behalf of Nitwit Nero that she can no longer determine what the truth is.
We will make sure that when a kid is in the womb, they're as safe as they are in a classroom, the workplace, a nursing home, because every stage of life has value. No one greater than the other.
Yep, she said it. Thanks for the reminder, Matt. Everybody drink.
See, this is... I'm eating, so I can't drink, so I'm working. Well, I just don't understand. I mean, I do. They're so concerned about the fetuses, but they don't give us anything for health care. There's no money for education. There's no money for housing.
Well,
there's
if a grieving parent from Uvalde heard that, I'm guessing you'd be able to hear them screaming, bitch, please, on the moon.
These people, Robin.
But she's got the inside track to be governor of Arkansas because she's a maggot.
Is there any hope left for us?
And Keith Olbermann burned her to the ground. He said, this confirms the GOP is in favor of abortion, provided it's done by an AR-15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That part. I mean, you know, here in California, they're trying, I think I heard you earlier about laws and about making sure people have insurance and all this, if they want to own a gun. They're trying something. They're working on something like that in up in Sacramento. Now, whether it happens, I don't know, but God, wouldn't it be amazing? I mean, you have to, in order to drive a car in any state, particularly here in California, you have to have at least a certain amount of liability insurance first, but you still have to, take a class, you have to take classes. Okay, so if you want to get a license before you turn 18, you need to take driver's ed and driver's training. If you want to get your license after you turn 18, you still have to take, but you still have to take a test. That you still have to take driver's ed and driver's training. So I've just, and if you drive, you have to have insurance in order to drive. The minimum liability insurance. And here in California, watch this. Because people, you know, we know most people, a lot of people, working people, can't afford, you know, insurance. So we have programs for low-cost insurance, Robin. How do I know? Because I used to be on that program. That you don't get full coverage, but at least you get at least liability insurance. So you would be, you know, in compliance with California state law. But, and yet, though, we can't make people get a, you know, license to carry a firearm. Or, you know, at least take a class to make sure you don't know how to use the motherfucker.
So you don't, you know, shoot yourself.
Right, or worse yet, anybody else?
Anytime I've ever handled a firearm, I have done so with extreme caution. And that's the only way you can really handle one and even have a hope of not having some oops, blam, pray thing happen.
Right.
Oh, and Ralph's just sent this along. I'm presuming it's true. Mike, and she saw it over at Democratic Underground. Michael Stenger, who was the Senate Sergeant at Arms in charge of Senate security the day of the Capitol coup, has died. So don't know if it had any relationship to what happened on J6, but you know that brings I think the total of dead Capitol cops to something like 10 now. From that coup? And the New York Times is still calling it a riot? Instead of the insurrection that it was, or, frankly, coup? Well.
But let that happen, a bunch of black people!
Well, there's that. Well, listen, you have yourself a good evening. Enjoy your dim sum. And hopefully somebody will respond and answer your challenge.
A challenge. I hope.
Same.
Let me know. Take care, my love. Talk to you soon.
All right. You have a good night. Drive careful.
You too. Bye.
Bye. And so we come to the end of this evening's program. Hopefully someone will answer Tracy's challenge, and that'll get us down to 1175 to finish June. I wish there was some other way to do this. I honestly do. But thank you to our Patreon subscribers, our PayPal subscribers. Thank you to all of our a la carte contributors. Thank you so, so, so very much. You're why this program and this ongoing conversation, this opportunity for us to talk amongst ourselves exists. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first round of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteroseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice. The only environmental organization ever to actually get a bill introduced in Congress that would end mountaintop removal. Yeah, we did that. The 8 campaign, which operates under the aegis of Coal River Mountain Watch, now a union shop. Listen, please stay safe. Get your second booster. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, wear your mask in crowded areas. Keep your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And if you happen to run across some
Bodine relative wandering down the streets, talking about how kids are going to be safe in the as safe in the womb as they are in the classroom, and thinking that's clever. Well, avoid her like the plague, because she is, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.